Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Joyce Fumakinwa, senior reporter at Home Healthcare News. Ahead of our latest episode, we want to let you know that if you're subscribed to the podcast directly through SoundCloud, a change that we've recently made in our infrastructure could affect your subscription. We apologize for the inconvenience and encourage you to subscribe through a podcast player such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Now on to our show. Today's episode is with Joseph McDonough, founder and CEO of Innovive Health. In this conversation, McDonough talks about serving complex behavioral health patients in their homes, the growing demands his company is seeing for behavioral health services, and where the company is at in its value-based care journey. Now let's get into it. Hello, Joe. Where are you joining us from today?
Oh, nice to speak to you, Joyce. I am calling you from rainy Gloucester, Massachusetts. It's a gray, dreary day here, but it's really nice to talk to you.
Well, hopefully the day will improve weather-wise, but I am very excited to have you on the podcast today. Let's get started. Innovive Health is a home-based care provider that serves complex behavioral health patients. While some home health companies have behavioral health segments, it's rare to see a company in the space so focused on this. For the listeners who are unfamiliar, can you explain your business and care delivery models and how you are caring for patients in the home?
Sure. So Innovive Health is a traditional VNA, like any other VNA, but except we don't care for geriatric patients that are Medicare patients. We care for younger Medicaid patients who have serious mental illnesses and concurrent medical comorbidities. So we provide in-home nursing care, occupational therapy, physical therapy, home health aides, and we service our patients in the community, in their homes. We look at social determinants. We communicate with all of their providers and put together a treatment plan that gives them the best chance of optimal outcomes. So we are located in throughout Massachusetts, Colorado, and Iowa currently.
And I'm curious a little bit about your current payer mix. You mentioned Medicaid.
Yes, most of our patients, almost 99% of our patients are Medicaid or, you know, Medicaid managed care plans. They're very chronic in nature, and they have significant needs in Medicaid in Massachusetts and in Colorado, and the managed care companies we work with in Iowa are really focused on this population, and they're very good payers, very supportive of our program.
So there's a rapidly growing population of behavioral health patients across the U.S. Can you talk to me a little bit about the demand you're seeing at Innovive?
Well, there's really a crisis out there. The demand has significantly increased since the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, according to the National Institute of Health, one in five American adults live with some form of mental illness. It's almost about 60 million people nationwide. It's really a true crisis. And, you know, unfortunately, access to care is limited. You know, 25% of that number says they have difficult time accessing care. And there's a significant increase in the younger population as well. And so it's something that we take very seriously. I think there's going to be a big issue over the next coming decade. And it's something that we're really trying to get in the thick of and really try to help. And our model really looks at the patient in the home. We look at patients where they are. And we work with all stakeholders in the community to ensure optimal outcomes.
When I interviewed you for HHCN a few years ago, you described your company as one that focuses on the 3 to 5% of individuals that drive roughly 50% of the costs in healthcare. Can you go into detail about what that looks like at Innovive?
Yeah, even though it's a significant population, it's almost a forgotten population, except for the cost. I mean, the costs are significant in this group. And our services, we estimate that our services, you know, save up to $200,000 to $250,000 per patient in Massachusetts, about $135,000 per patient in Iowa, and about $200,000 per patient in Colorado. You know, our program significantly reduces hospitalizations, ED utilization as well, And we really create a much better quality of life for the patients, as well as creating significant cost savings for our Medicaid plans and our payer sources.
What are some of the advantages of addressing behavioral health in the home, maybe compared to a more traditional care setting?
Well, when we go into the home, you know, we're able to look at the social determinants. We're able to look at things that really drive positive and negative outcomes. You know, for instance, if a patient is diabetic, we look in their refrigerator and maybe they have 2 liters of Coca-Cola, maybe they have bags of Doritos that they're eating, and we're able to work with the appropriate community supports to give them a much better diet and you know, give them a better chance at having stable glucose levels. So we're also able to look at if, you know, do they have a roommate that is in crisis, that is a drug user. We're able to maybe get our patients into a better living situation. So really, you know, in our view, home should be the epicenter of care. You know, it's the place where the patient is most comfortable. It's the place where the patient is most of the time. And really, that's really our passion, is to really move, you know, the care into the home. A lot of times, you know, people look at hospitals as sort of the hub of care. We look at the hospital as a failure point for our population. And, you know, it's not uncommon when we admit a patient, when our nurses go in to admit a patient, they may be assigned a primary care physician, a psychiatrist, maybe a diabetic specialist and or a cardiac specialist or a pulmonary specialist. And oftentimes we find that these physicians have never spoken. So our nurses will talk to all the different stakeholders. You know, we will reconcile the medications, make sure there's no significant interactions with the medications, and get everybody on board and all of their input to put together a care plan that gives the patient the most optimal outcomes. And so we really look at the home as the epicenter of care.
So to pull on one of the threads that you just introduced, you mentioned that, you know, connecting the patients that you're working with to community partners is also a big part of this for Innovive. Can you share some examples of what that looks like? What kind of community partners is the company currently working with?
Oh, we work with everybody, you know, so we work with, you know, we work with different community groups for food insecurity for our patients, for example. We make sure that our patients transition from shelters into better care settings. We work with, for instance, in Massachusetts, we work very closely with the Department of Mental Health and their the groups that they coordinate with to make sure our patients have all the supports that they need. And Massachusetts does a wonderful job of providing a lot of housing supports, a lot of food supports, and a lot of psychiatric support as well.
So I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about growth. I know that expansion has been a big part of your company's growth journey. Can you talk about the company's geographic expansion over the past few years and how this aligns with trying to meet the demands of the national mental health crisis that you mentioned earlier?
Sure. I mean, there's really a demand everywhere in this country. I mean, all 50 states. Even Puerto Rico as well. And so we our first state, we picked Colorado. Colorado has a Medicaid system that closely mirrors what Massachusetts does, but they have a significant need. I mean, they have a suicide rate of 21.1 people per 100,000 compared to the national average of 13.1 people per 100,000. And so it's a state has significant needs. I mean, Governor Polis of Colorado has invested over $550 million for health equity programs for this population. And so we thought it would be a great state, you know, for us to address. Also, Iowa is another state that where we have a partnership with the Medicaid managed care plans there. And Iowa is a state that is not only last in the country for the amount of hospital beds they have, but they have 128,000 Iowans have a serious mental illness, and 68 also have significant medical conditions. So these are states that have a lot of needs, and we are partnering with different providers there and payer sources. And, you know, we're really looking at deepening our relationships in those states, as well as looking at, I mean, there's significant other states in this country that have need for our services. So we'll be expanding as the years go forward.
Aside from geographic expansion, what were some of your company's other growth drivers this year?
So really, as I said in the last answer, I mean, it's really managed care partnerships. I mean, I think we have a unique opportunity with visionary managed care programs to really, create a program, you know, for instance, with data sharing. You know, one of the things that anyone that, and whether it's a Medicaid program or a managed care program, that they don't fully understand is what happens to these patients once they got out of the hospital. You know, what are the drivers for negative outcomes? What are the drivers for optimal outcomes? You know, for instance, we have data that shows that at the 15th month mark of us caring for a patient, we stop hospitalizations almost altogether. And we don't know why it's 15 months. You know, we don't know why it couldn't be 6 months. We don't have that data yet. So for us, but we also don't have insight into what happens to a patient, you know, before they're referred to us. So being able to partner with visionary managed care partners and have an understanding of the data that happens before, you know, we take on a patient, and then us combining the data, I think we can really, you know, create a better understanding of what drives positive outcomes as well as negative outcomes to really change, you know, the future of care for this population. So that's a real growth driver for us, for sure.
I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the challenges you're seeing. What are some of the biggest regulatory concerns in the space right now, and how are you navigating these challenges?
Well, I know there's a lot going on a federal level right now, but we deal, because Medicaid is obviously a federal program that's managed by states. We deal with regulatory concerns on a state level, and each state is very different. So, you know, we of course want, you know, more resources, you know, more financial resources to be able to recruit better. You know, labor is always an issue, and I'm sure everybody in healthcare would say attracting clinicians is really a significant challenge right now. So, you know, just getting more support for this population and more resources to better be able to recruit and retain our staff.
Staying on this topic of challenges, what are some of the biggest operational challenges in the space, and how are you navigating those?
Well, as we get larger and as we start going to other states, I mean, culture is an issue. You know, getting continuity of culture across all of our regions is a challenge. You know, as a clinician myself, it's, you know, culture to me is very important, and we have done quite well as far as retaining our staff and keeping our staff very invested in our mission. So as we get larger and as we start spreading out throughout the country, you know, maintaining that culture is extremely important. You know, we invest a lot in our staff. We, you know, provide education for our leaders. For instance, we have a wonderful relationship with Dartmouth College and their Masters of Healthcare Delivery Science program. We've had, you know, multiple leaders in our executive team have gone through that program, including myself. And so we're constantly investing in our leadership and making sure that we're up for the challenges that we'll be facing ahead.
How is technology helping Innovive address any of maybe the challenges that we've discussed, or even ones maybe that we haven't discussed yet?
Well, I mean, technology is always important. You know, we've been cloud-based for many years, so it's really allowed us to be able to you know, spread geographically and be able to be effective operationally throughout multiple states. So we do a lot with Salesforce. We have a very innovative Salesforce model in our intake department that we use, and we've closely partnered with them to make sure that once we onboard patients, we're able to really communicate with all the stakeholders. Of course, we're looking at AI right now as well as far as care delivery. And, you know, once we get into a value-based program and the predictive analytics space, you know, that's going to become important as well. So, yeah, technology is going to be a huge thing, particularly AI, over the next 5 years, I believe.
Yeah. And as a follow-up, can you say a little bit more right now about what you guys are doing in terms of AI utilization?
Well, we're not doing much with AI at the moment. We're researching it, and part of what we're finding is that there's a sort of a plethora of regulatory challenges as far as how you utilize AI. So we're taking more of a cautious approach since it's changing so rapidly. But we are definitely looking at several companies to assist with our care delivery, particularly around documentation and areas that we can find. Ways to be more innovative as far as information and collecting data.
And in May, I had the opportunity to interview Innovive COO Kristen Palomo, who was part of a panel discussion that we had at our conference, Capital and Strategy. The topic was value-based care. And at the time, your company was new to taking on risk. I'd love to hear more about where Innovive is at with the value-based care today.
Well, I'm sure Kristen did a wonderful job. She's amazing. We're exploring several value-based arrangements with our payer partners. Because I believe, as I said earlier, we save roughly in Colorado and Massachusetts over $200,000 per patient per year. In Iowa, we save about $135,000 per patient per year. And so we definitely would love to capture some of that value. And again, as well as entering into a data sharing arrangements with multiple payers. Massachusetts right now is exploring a value-based arrangement. And so we're hopeful that will come aboard. I mean, I want to get away from a fee-for-service model. I just don't think it's necessarily. I don't think it works as well as a more innovative value-based model for this population. And we're kind of stuck in a fee-for-service thing, and I want to move away from that.
Yeah, I would love to hear more about that. I feel these days more home health companies are open to, for lack of a better way to put it, not overly relying on a fee-for-service model. Can you talk a little bit about, what role that plays in your company's decision to really dive, into value-based care more?
Well, I mean, fee-for-service is constraining. It's not necessarily appropriate. I think the more stakeholders can coordinate care in the community and not, utilize technology more, I think there's more savings to be had, and I think there's a better quality care that can be had for the patient, and better outcomes can result. So, I look forward to working with payers and the state of Massachusetts and hopefully Colorado someday to help put together a system that can better care for this patient as well as constrain costs.
So to go back to, my question about where Innovive is at in its value-based care journey, have you seen any impacts on your margins yet?
What margins? No, we're investing, we're expanding, we're really focusing, on really developing our staff. We focus a lot on education. And so over the next couple of years, it's really about deepening our relationships in the states that we're in. And we'll be expanding to several other states in the next couple of years. So as far as our margins, we really are focused on our quality of care and our expansion plans as well.
So we are nearing the end of our conversation, but I wanted to end by asking you, as the year is starting to wind down, what are your company's main area of focus for the rest of 2025?
Well, we're going to continue to deepen our relationships in the communities that we serve. We're going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to innovate. And we're going to continue to really, provide excellent quality care for our population and really get optimal outcomes, get better outcomes, give our patients a much better quality of life. And that is our mission. We are laser-like focused on that. And, I'm really excited to see what the next year brings and the year after that. And we really are a mission-driven organization. So we're excited.
Joe, thank you so much for joining us today on Disrupt.
Thank you very much for having me, Joyce. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletter at homehealthcarenews.com or consider becoming an HHCN Plus member. And one more reminder that if you are subscribed to the podcast directly through SoundCloud, a change that we've recently made in our infrastructure could affect your subscription. We apologize for the inconvenience and encourage you to subscribe through a podcast player such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I'm Joyce Fomakinwa, and this has been a production of WTWH Media.